reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Mark. When Jesus returned to Capernaum after some days, it became known that he was at home. Many gathered together so that there was no longer room for them, not even around the door, as he preached the word to them. They came bringing to him a paralyzed man carried by four men. Unable to get near Jesus because of the crowd, they opened up the roof above him. After they had broken through, they let down the mat on which the paralyzed man was lying. When Jesus saw their faith, he said to the paralyzed man, "Child, your sins are forgiven." Now some of the scribes were sitting there. They began to ask themselves, "Why does this man speak this way? He is blaspheming. Who but God alone can forgive sins?" Jesus immediately knew in his mind what they were thinking to themselves. So he said, "Why are you thinking such things in your heart? Which is easier to say, 'Your sins are forgiven,' or 'Rise, pick up your mat, and walk'? But so that you may know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins," he said, turning to the paralyzed man, "Rise, pick up your mat, and go home." He rose, picked up his mat at once, and went out in the sight of everyone. They were all astounded and glorified God, saying, "We have never seen anything like this." The Gospel of the Lord. I preach a lot on this Gospel. I think it's one of the most powerful. I'll mention just one element today, which is Jesus' command to the paralyzed man after he had worked the two miracles. First, the cleansing of his soul, and second, the strengthening of his body. You put yourself in that man's circumstances for a second. He's probably jumping up and down. It's probably the happiest day of his life. What did Jesus say? "Pick up your mat." Jesus was going to put him to work. He was now going to allow the man to fulfill his responsibilities. And that was part of the joy. It wasn't going to be something that would have gratified that man that day to pick up that mat and carry it all the way home. But it was part of his continued spiritual cure. What I want to spend my time on today is this very important first reading, which is the beginning of the downfall of Israel. After God had worked so many miracles, rescued them so many times, they said, "We want a king." Samuel told them all that the king would do. Imagine the most corrupt ruler. Somebody will take your kids. Somebody will tax you like crazy. "We want a king." "God won't even listen to you," he says, "when you cry on out, because he's telling you all that will come first." And yet they continued to say, "We want a king." And what was their motivation? "We too must be like other nations." We were made to be like God. They wanted to be like everyone else. And because they wanted to be like everyone else, they started to go downhill. Why is this relevant for us? Not just as a lesson in Jewish history. The Catholic Church in the United States started to go downhill when Catholics here in this country, who are among the most sacrificial in the world, faithful in the world, even though they came and they had little education, they built the greatest educational network, greatest private educational network in the history of civilization. built the greatest hospital network in the history of civilization. All of this was being built incredible parishes everywhere. Some of the times on the same city block, and they were all packed. What happened? We want to be like everybody else. We want to have a Catholic president. We don't care what he will compromise to be a Catholic president. We want to have a Catholic president. We want to get into these nice little waspy clubs. We want to be like everybody else. Rather than to recognize that the Lord has always called his people to be distinctive in the world, passionately loving the gift of human life, which God has pronounced very good, but at the same time not being of the world. At an individual level, each of us needs to look at these principles and ask, is my goal to fit in with everybody else, to do what everybody else does? Or is my goal, the personal thing that drives me in life, to fit in with God and to do what God does? That's really, in some ways, the single most important question any of us will ever need to ask and answer. Today, as we come forward, as Jesus says to us again, do this in memory of me. Become small, give your whole life out of love for others, even when they don't thank you, even when they receive you unworthily, even when they blow you off and put literally everything else more important than you. Do this in memory of me. This is the real path, the model of happiness in this world and in the next. We need to overcome that desire that comes from below to be just like everybody else. Instead, we want to be like God and help everybody else to become like God too. That is the only reason why we were born, and that's the only reason why we're still alive. Many of you, like me, over these last few days, seeing some of the photos of the devastation in Haiti, must have asked, Lord, why not me? There are so many people who die by accidents, drunk drivers, tragedies at work. So many people at 4:53 were just doing their ordinary thing in Haiti a few days ago. I got an email from a priest I know down there, a young priest working very hard. The earthquake happened literally as he took the bread into his hands and was about to start the words of consecration. At 4:53, he was right about to bring God down as the whole church, and he was in the basement of his church in concrete above his head as it began to shake, and he immediately needed to go to help those who were screaming outside. Any of us could have that happen to us. The fundamental reason why we're still here is because God has given us the mission I've described. May he strengthen us in the Eucharist we're about to receive to courageously embrace and fulfill those marching orders.